hear leniencies from you regarding playing hockey, as is my son, who's also watching this. And I should also note, is a little bit offended by your choice of clip in the beginning, because that was John Tortorella, and John Tortorella is different. You can't compare what he's doing to what others do. In any case, welcome everyone to our Canada Day Learnathon, the third session in our Learnathon. I will note I have my Canada Day tie. It's not as good as Ezra's Maple Leaf background, but nonetheless, there you go. Thank you very much for tuning in. I know that people are somewhat zoomed out these days, but hopefully this won't be too much of a drain on your Zoom energy for when you go back to work tomorrow. I want to thank Nathan Kirsch for dedicating the program this morning. Our learning is in memory of his parents, Lou and Ruth Kirsch, Zichronim Levracha, and his brother Jerry Kirsch, Zichronim Levracha. Nathan, thank you very much for dedicating it in their memory. I also want to note for people, we mentioned it in the beginning of the Zoom, but some people have joined, that we actually succeeded. Technical achievement. We are streaming this live on our Facebook page, which means that in the event that you don't want your faces to be visible on Facebook, you should probably turn off video. Okay. So I used the term... I used the term sock culture in the title of the session, and the source sheet for the session is actually now linked in the chat, so you can see it there. You can download it. I may share it at some point. We'll see. But I used the term sock culture. What I meant by sock culture was something that I actually first learned about before coming to Canada. I had a computer science professor when I was at Yeshiva University with a great sense of humor. He was a Russian fellow. He had a very Russian sense of humor, if I can use that. He invited us over to his home for Shabbos, and for Shabbos lunch he had guests who were British, and it was a father and a mother and a couple of kids, and there was a boy there who was, I don't know, I would ballpark it being 9 or 10 years old, and they had a beautiful wood floor. When you came in, the whole first floor of the house was this beautiful, beautiful wood. And so the practice that the family had, that was hosting us, was that you didn't wear shoes. You came into the house, you took your shoes off, and you walked around in your socks. I had never seen anybody do that before, but he told us, as his students, we were coming and spending Shabbos there, he said, take off your shoes when you come in. But he had not told the guests, and I'm standing there behind this boy from the family, and he had what was either a British accent or a South African accent, as he says to his mother, "Mommy, they're not wearing shoes." He was so perplexed that that everybody was shoeless and that he was not. That he was wearing them. He was very confused. At least it was funny to me at the time. This is something which, of course, when I came to Canada, I learned all about. The idea that when you walk into the home, you take off your shoes. Why is it that Canadians take off their shoes when they come in the house? What's the rationale? I'm seeing some shrugs. Oh, come on. Why? There is a reason. People are muted. You can unmute yourself.
Don't want to dirty the house.
Yeah, you don't want to get the floor dirty. We have a mud and slush society for much of the year, and so we have a practice of taking off our shoes. That's where this comes from. On the other hand, I can think of various relatives of mine who are horrified by this. The idea of walking around the home in your socks is very upsetting to them because, of course, in Jewish law, mourners do not wear shoes. Mourners are the ones who walk around their home in socks. And the idea that one would take on a behavior that's associated with avelus, that's associated with grieving, with bereavement, is something that they absolutely cannot wrap their mind around. So the question really is there a problem with walking around without shoes on, which is indeed an act we associate with mourning? Is this problematic? And if it's problematic, how is it that it's so widespread in the Jewish community? Everybody, you know, does this. They take off their shoes and they walk around in their socks. So what I want to do is first talk about why sock culture, this idea of taking off your shoes when you come in the house, is a good thing. What's appropriate about this? Then talk about the concerns that we have in Judaism, because there are halachic concerns, concerns of Jewish law surrounding this. And then to talk about in the end, so what can you do about it? So we've got the number one, why should you go in socks? Number two, why shouldn't you go in socks? What are the concerns? And then how do we resolve this? At the end of the day, it's going to be fine to walk around in socks. So don't worry, you're really okay. So, why should one follow sock culture? Well, first of all, if you're a guest in somebody else's home, it's self-evident that as a matter of ben adam lachavero, as a matter of looking out for other people, you should take off your shoes. Like, who gave you the right to go destroy somebody else's property? And certainly if you live in a culture where that's the standard expectation. So in other words, if the host is expecting me to take off my shoes, and I walk in with shoes, with mud, with slush, whatever, on them, and I dirty up their floor, then I am violating their hosting. They invited me in. Who gave me the right to do that to them? In fact, there's a whole area of Jewish law regarding Nezikin, regarding tort law, that discusses what happens if somebody invites me into their home and I damage their property. And where the damage is expected damage, where it's normal and he knew when he invited me in that this could happen, it's one thing. But where they expected that I was going to take off my shoes and I did not, I may indeed be liable for that damage that I did to their floor. So on a very basic level, you come into somebody's house and they observe the practice of taking off your shoes. Of course you should take off your shoes. But even in your own home, we are taught to treat our property with care and respect. First of all, you're not allowed to destroy your property, right? The Torah has a law of Baal Tashchis. You're not allowed to destroy your property. You're not allowed to waste it. It's actually a rabbinic prohibition rather than a biblical one. Nonetheless, it speaks to the fact that you're not allowed to waste your property. We have the classic story involving our ancestor Yaakov, Jacob, and how he is alone when he's about to face his brother Esav. He is alone as he crosses the river at night. Why? Because he went back for pachim ketanim, for small jugs. Nobody escorted him because he was just on this small errand, but he wanted to go back and make sure that he would rescue the property because it has value. That's number one. And number two, we respect our property because it's a gift from God. It's a gift from Hashem, and Hashem gives you something, you take care of it. So that's another reason. Even if it's not somebody else's property, even if it's our own, we should take off our shoes in the home to avoid damaging the floor. There's also the entertainment value of colorful socks. I should note that as well, but that's an entirely different session. Sock culture is a good thing. That's what we've established. However, we have concerns, and the concerns are for, believe it or not, something that would be considered dangerous. Now, when I made the original title for this session, I used the term ayin hara. It's not actually ayin hara. I was using the term as shorthand. The idea of ayin hara, which is something we've discussed in sessions on other occasions, the idea of ayin hara is that if you display your good fortune before others, you can inspire jealousy, it can create all sorts of problems. That's not the issue here that we're actually talking about. The concern here and the danger here is that a person's speech and a person's actions can unintentionally lead to harm. This may sound to some like superstition. Generally speaking, the Torah prohibits superstition. However, as we're going to see, our issue is explained on a rational level and reflects greater ideas that are found in the Torah and even back in Tanakh. Interestingly, we have certain practices in Judaism that do seem like they are somewhat on a superstition level. So there's an issue of, if you're drinking at a meal, not drinking cups in pairs. As an example of that, something called zugot, not to drink pairs of drinks. And in areas like that, the Talmud comments, mind the cup and kavdina nilaveh. If you're careful about this, then don't violate those rules because you'll get in trouble if you do. But if you're not careful about it, then you can ignore it and forget about it. The Talmud doesn't say that regarding what we're talking about here. It does not take it lightly at all. So, what we're going to see are three ways in which a human being might unintentionally invite disaster on themselves or on other people via their speech or via And those are going to be the concerns that might lead us to say, don't invest in sock culture, don't follow sock culture. So, the first concern is that a person who verbally, we're talking verbally first, describes divine condemnation or divine punishment for themselves is inviting disaster on themselves. Now, I kept my source sheet brief because I, first of all, didn't want to spend the whole time sharing the screen. I like seeing people to the extent that people are comfortable with their face being visible on Facebook. But I don't like sharing the screen if I can avoid it. And also because this is a 30-minute session. This is not an hour, hour and a half. So my source sheet is brief, but I did put it in the chat for those who wish to download it. Our first concern is, again, inviting disaster on oneself by describing divine condemnation or punishment for oneself. So that, in the first source on the sheet, I gave you a reference to the story of Yaakov and Rachel, Jacob and Rachel, when they flee from the house of Laban, Yaakov's father-in-law. Then Laban pursues them, and he says, you stole my gods, you stole the trophim of mine, and it's true, Rachel had actually stolen them, but Yaakov didn't know that. Yaakov says to Laban, whoever is found to be holding your idols shall die. And of course, Laban searches and doesn't find them, but Rachel dies shortly thereafter. And some sources suggest that this is, in some sense, something Yaakov invited upon them because of what he said, whoever has the idols shall die. Another example from the opening chapter of the book of Yeshaya, the book of Isaiah. Isaiah says, Hisedom Hayinu. We, the Jewish people, became so bad, we were like the city of Sodom, which is described in the Torah as being very evil. And the response in the very next verse in that chapter is, listen up to the word of God, Kitzinei Sodom, you officials of Sodom. We called ourselves like Sodom, we condemned ourselves, and then God responds with that condemnation. Mark, I saw your note to me in the chat, I'm going to get to that. That's in the next category. This idea is so strong, the idea that we want to avoid a situation in which I'm just sharing my sheet on the screen now because you'll need it for the next source. So you should see it shortly. But this idea that we wish to avoid describing God condemning us or punishing us migrates from these passages in the Torah, the story with Rachel, and the verse in Isaiah, to be found in the Talmud as well. In source number 2 that you should now see on your sheet. And I'm reading out my English translation in the interests of time. Our sages taught, those who are involved in a eulogy should say certain things, and then it describes what the mourner is going to do. The mourner stands and justifies his judgment, what we call in Hebrew, tzidduk hadin. And he says, Master of the universe, I have sinned much. You have not punished me for even 1/1000th of it. I should have written 1/1000th, but you know what I meant. May your will be to fence in our breaches and the breaches of your entire nation of Israel with mercy. So he's expressing gratitude to God. You didn't even hit me for 1/1000th of what I deserve. I am bereaved, and yet. And Abaye, the sage, responds and says, no, 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 no. One should not say this. Don't do it. And he quotes you the verses in Isaiah. He says, Reish Lakish, the sage, said, it was taught in the name of Rabbi Yossi, one should never open his mouth for the Satan. Satan is a whole other concept. I gave a class on it a couple of years ago. We're not going into that right now. But the idea is, don't leave an opening for somebody to condemn you, for God, in our case, to condemn you and to say you are evil, just like in Isaiah, where the people say, we were like Sodom. And then the response is, yeah, you officials of Sodom. If a person is going to say, God, I committed such terrible things, you haven't punished me for even 1/1000th of it, you are moving God to say, you know, you're right. I should do a little more. That's the idea. Some actually connect this to the practice of not saying tachanun in the house of an avel, in the house of a mourner, not to invite further judgment, because the prayer of tachanun says, chatasi, I have sinned. There's a similar passage in source number 3, also with Abaye saying, don't describe any sort of guilt for yourself, where a person is going to go into the bathhouse, And there was a concern for danger from the fire in the bathhouse, the heat in the bathhouse. What exactly the concern was is unclear, but they have the idea of somebody saying, God, if I die, let it be an atonement for me. And we're told, no, don't say that. Don't say those words. You're not supposed to do that. I'm going to stop sharing the sheet now on the screen, but I'll put the link in the chat once again so that people can download it. But what you see here is you don't want to express anything that might bring divine punishment. That's number one. Number two. Second is the concern that one invites disaster by describing bad things happening to oneself, not as judgment, but in general. So, as an example of that, I brought you, those who have downloaded the sheet will be able to see it there, the Goliath, before his fight with David, when he's taunting the Jews, says, send out a champion. If he can fight me and he strikes me down, then dot, 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 dot. And the Talmud comments on that. Goliath foretold his own end, that somebody would stand up and would indeed strike him down. Another story, also from Tanakh, involves a man named Yehu. Yehu wishes to attack the prophets of the Baal, and he comes up with a strategy. It's a sting operation. He says, I'm going to hold a big session. We're all going to worship, he says, that they're all going to worship the Baal. And he says the verse that you can see in number 4 on the sheet for those who downloaded it. He said, Ahav, King Ahav served Baal a little. Yehu, me, I'm going to serve Baal a lot. That's what he says. Yehu served a little bit. I'm going to serve a lot. And he ends up succumbing to idolatry himself. He falls into idolatry himself later on in his story, and the Talmud says, I gave you the reference on the sheet, that this is because of the way he spoke. If you speak of something bad happening to you, you're inviting it. And this goes to what was sent to me in the chat. Somebody noted that there are those who won't use the word cancer. They'll say that illness instead of mentioning it. There's a lot to be said about this, but it's already 11:18, so I'm going to go further. There's a third of our three areas, which is more relevant for the sock culture issue. The first two were verbal. The third one is not verbal, but rather physical. Acting as though one has been harmed, or as though others have been harmed, is also considered to be inviting harm. In general, our actions are significant both for the positive and for the negative. So I put in source number 6 on the sheet, for those who have downloaded it from the link in the chat, God tells Abraham, rise and walk about the land, its length and its width, because I'm going to give it to you. And we understand that that's actually a way of foretelling his children acquiring the land. On the other hand, in the negative, God has the prophet Isaiah walk around in tattered clothing to symbolize the fall that is going to befall Egypt and Ethiopia when they are going to be struck in battle. The positive being acted out and the negative being acted out. And this comes up talmudically. When I was in school, in day school, the teachers always told us if somebody came in with a wheelchair, somebody came in with crutches, that you should not use the crutches. Right? You ever hear that? I mean, those who I can see on here cannot. They always told us that. It's actually a passage in the Talmud. I gave you the reference in source number 7. There, they're actually talking about people who are soliciting money. In other words, they're going to people and saying, please support me, and they demonstrate as though they are blind, malnourished, or lame, so that people will have sympathy for them. And the Talmud says, a person who does that is going to have that happen to them in the end. In another example, we're taught that a sage who is demonstrating shechita, a sage who is demonstrating slaughter on once how slaughter is carried out, should not demonstrate it on his own skin. Should not make a gesture like that of the knife. Marks of tsarat, which are manifest on the skin, a person shouldn't try to identify them on himself or herself. This comes up in halacha, in Jewish law. Right? I am sure that many people here are familiar with the practice of not saying Kaddish while one's parents are alive. Right? Why? Because it's acting as a mourner. There are other practices as well. I noted in source number 8, but in the interest of time, I'm going to move forward because someone sent me the important question in the chat. I have now done the following. I have told you that you're supposed to wear socks in the house and not shoes in the house because you're supposed to protect the property of others and because you're supposed to protect and honor your own property. And yet I have told you that speaking in a way which describes divine punishment and condemnation, or which describes bad things happening to yourself, or acting as though bad things are going to happen or have happened, all of these things are dangerous. So what do we do? Is sock culture off limits? What are we supposed to do? And here I come to the big question which was sent to me in the chat, which is, where is this harm coming from? How do comments or actions bring on something bad? What in the world is this? I told you before, I don't think it's superstition. Well, what in the world is it? So, we have multiple ideas in the commentators about this, and I'm going to share my source sheet so that you'll be able again to see it based on that. Those who didn't download it from the chat. So just scrolling down, it'll show up on your screen shortly, to source number 9. There are different causes for the different types of harm. When we talk about a person describing oneself as being punished, saying, God, I've done terrible things, and you've only punished me 1/1000th. What's wrong with saying that? Rabbi Shmuel Edel's, the Maharsha, in source number 9, explains, we have a principle in Jewish courts, Hodas Baldin Kemeya Eidim Dami. If a litigant admits that he has done something wrong, if a litigant says in court, I am guilty, that's like having 100 witnesses against him. So one problem here is that in the event that you acknowledge that you've done something wrong, so you're certifying, I deserve punishment. That's what you're saying. That's the concern when you describe yourself being condemned by God, or that you describe punishment for yourself. What about the category in which people describe bad things happening to themselves? So we have a range of biblical verses that speak to the power of speech. I brought them in source number 10. I brought a few of them in source number 10 that talk about how speech can lead to harm. You could take those verses literally as just saying on a very rational level, be careful of what you say because your speech is dangerous. However, the Zohar, classic fundamental work of Jewish mysticism, says no. Speech is really important. I brought you in source number 11 my translation in sources 11, 12, and 13. They come from source sheets that I did in which I was just working with my translation, so I didn't give you the original on them. But if you look at the Zohar in source number 11, it speaks of how God values every aspect of a person's speech. Even the breath of a person's mouth has a place and a position. Every word has a place and a position. There's a midrash I didn't bring on here which talks about God assigning a person a certain number of words in the course of their lifetime, an idea you may have heard from your parents when you were very young and talking a lot. Rabbi Chaim of Volozhin explains why we assign such power to speech. He says, speech, the words we speak have three aspects. Speech, thought, and deed. That's the letters, the vowels, and the ta'amim, the emphasis that we use when we express these words. And we suggest, what Rabbi Chaim of Volozhin suggests, is that speech actually reflects three parts of the human soul. The neshama, the ruach, and the nefesh. We don't have time to go into all the mysticism behind it. The idea that we're expressing, though, is that the way that a person speaks is actually the way that a person speaks is assigned great power, and God will honor it. I gave you another source that speaks about the damage of lashon hara, speaking negatively about others, as a point within this. So God has given our words great power. You speak about bad things can happen, and that's our second point. And the third and last point, again, moving away from speech into actions, when we talk about acting out bad things, Ramban, in source number 14, Rabbi Moses Nachmanides suggests that when God issues a decree, when God says that something harmful is going to happen or something good is going to happen, at the moment that it starts to become real, it becomes irreversible. In other words, if God says something good is going to happen, it should always happen. If God says something bad should happen, that someone deserves to have something bad happen, it could still be halted. You could still repent. You could still pray. You can still change things. But once it's implemented, it's too late. So Ramban Nachmanides says, that's the concern here. The concern is that the person who walks around the house in their socks, acting as though they were already a mourner, is making that decree substantive, is making that decree real upon themselves. And that's the concern. So we have three issues. A person is describing himself, herself, being punished. It's like an acknowledgement they deserve punishment. They're using their speech to describe bad things happening to themselves. And God has given power to that person's speech. Or they're acting out bad things happening. They're actualizing what had just been a bad decree. Now that I know why these are concerns, I can also combat them. Meaning, if my concern about speech is that it looks like either a statement of punishment is deserved or bringing punishment on, or bringing harm on oneself, all you need to do to defeat that is make it explicit that it's not your intention. You say, I don't want this to happen. However, maybe you say a little tefillah, a little prayer with it. It shouldn't be. Right? God forbid this shouldn't happen, but dot, dot, dot. You can counter your speech with speech. And many, many people do that. What about in the case of actions that act, that seem to demonstrate being a mourner? So here I think you need more than just a statement, because the decree has been actualized. But what, our actions sometimes have multiple possible meanings. When a person says Kaddish, it doesn't mean they're a mourner. Maybe it means someone else needs someone to say Kaddish. Maybe it means the minyan needs a Kaddish said after Aleinu. There are other ways to interpret it. If a person takes off their shoes in the house, it doesn't necessarily mean they're a mourner. Maybe it means they're trying to preserve the floor. It's not that they're a mourner. Since there is an alternative explanation for why one is wearing socks, I don't think that this is such a concern. Because you have the alternative meaning for it. So, again, summary. There are clear benefits to wearing socks in terms of preserving and respecting our property, avoiding harming the property of others. The problem with wearing it is that it looks like bringing a decree of grief and bereavement upon oneself. But since you have this alternative interpretation for why you're wearing socks, I don't think that it's a concern. There's more to be said, especially for why it's not an issue of of superstition, the differences between superstition and this. But Rabbi Ziering has agreed from Israel to tune in and give the next session, and I certainly don't want to take his time. He's already 7 hours ahead of us. But on the source sheet, I'm going to put the link in the chat one more time for the source sheet. I put review questions, which hopefully will help people with it, about what are the reasons to wear socks, what are the issues in terms of speech, what are the issues in terms of actions, and why fundamentally is this an okay thing to do. I have burned through my time, so I'm not going to be able to take questions now, except to note that somebody asked me, is the same thing true for sitting on a low chair? Where there's a real reason to sit on a low chair that isn't bereavement, I think that yes, you have another narrative, I think you're okay. However, if there is no other reason besides, I want to torture my back, then I think you have to ask yourself whether that's really the right thing to do. That's what I would say. And someone else wrote to me in the chat, he wears slippers, and I say to you, yashar koach. Okay, I'm going to make Natanel the host so he can share Rabbi Ziering's source sheet. Thank you everybody for tuning in. And again, Nathan, thank you so much for dedicating this in memory of your parents and in memory of your brother.